and we are, moving to cloud has its challenges. One of those challenges is latency. Maybe you remember Datanauts podcast show 16, where we talked to John Merline, and John related this latency problem. Now, he described it like this. Processes that used to run close by each other were now scattered across different public clouds with comparatively high latency between them. And of course, if you increase network latency, you increase transaction time. So for this episode, climb aboard the Datanauts train as we lay tracks to the cloud, minimizing the cars full of latency we're hauling behind us. And how will we do that? Well, this train goes to Cloud Exchange Station. I am Ethan Banks, at EC Banks on Twitter. My world-traveling co-host Chris Wall is here also, and you can find him at Chris Wall. And of course, this is the Datanauts podcast about cross-silo infrastructure engineering. You can find this and all of our shows at packetpushers.net, or you can just put Datanauts podcast into the Googles and it'll pop right up there for you. Joining the Datanauts today is Mark Thiele. Mark is the EVP for Ecosystem Development and Evangelism at SuperNAP. And Mark, that is a sufficiently long and obtuse title to obfuscate any real meaning. So maybe you could help the Datanauts audience understand who you are and what you do.
Sure. Well, first, Ethan and Chris, thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm looking forward to this. It should be a lot of fun. Basically, a big part of my role here is to help evangelize the idea that the future of compute is a lot more than just moving your systems from one data center to another. The traditional colo environment was the equivalent of buying storage space at the local storage company and moving your junk from your garage to there. The only real advantage it did was it gave you more room in your house to put more junk in, but it doesn't really change anything for you as an owner of that junk. So we're trying to change that paradigm at SuperNAP. You know, Rob's vision here for the ecosystem is really to create the equivalent of a marketplace that not only creates and develops new services and products by virtue of having so many people in one place, but enables our customer to quickly and effectively, securely and cost-effectively adopt and unadopt new technologies in the cloud and modern IT space.
Got it. Therein, we understand the evangelism part of your title. We got it. So, Mark, something else I noticed when I was checking out your LinkedIn profile, you said something very optimistic in there. Just to quote you, you say, "I love IT for its infinite promise." And before we get started in our discussion about cloud stuff, what do you mean by that, IT for its infinite promise?
It's funny. You know, I'm going to use a really, really old comparison. But when I was first starting to play with PCs and software, I wasn't one of the gamers or somebody that had one of the first PCs and, you know, tore it apart at home. I wasn't like that. I came into PCs relatively late for a technologist who's been in the space for 30 years now. And so the first time I started playing with PCs as an end user, I quickly realized that there were a lot of ways to make what I was doing better when I combined more than one tool to solve an individual problem. So in this case, something like using OmniPro. Now, I know I'm dating myself. I apologize. Using something like OmniPro, I combined the capabilities of OmniPro and other editors and Freelance and Lotus 1-2-3 in order to create a product that was better than it could have been in any one of those tools. And when you think about the literally millions of different tools from the hardware layer up through the tool layer up through already developed software up through different ways to use that software under different circumstances, up through different ways to modify that software, up through software that hasn't even been designed yet, where you use tools like Python or Ruby or whatever else to help develop it, that's where I see the infinite promise of IT being. No matter what we see as a solution on the market today from a software perspective or even from a hardware perspective, you give a few smart people a little bit of time and they'll come up with something better and different, more capable, faster than you believe possible. And, we see that every day. And what I said in my LinkedIn profile, I'm saying it because I hear a lot of people talking all the time about how, all IT is commoditized or everybody has IT. And so IT's done. Amazon owns the cloud or whatever. And, and we're still looking at phase one of cloud. And we're still looking at phase one of a lot of things in IT. We just think it's mature because we're in the middle of it at this point. But everything from containers to cloud to networking to IoT to big data to you name it. I mean, we're just scratching the surface. And every day we add a new capability, a new product potential opportunity in the IT space. We magnify the overall opportunity of IT tenfold. So that's, anyway, in a long-winded answer, that's kind of my view of IT and why I love the prospect of IT so much.
I like the way you put it that, you know, we're in phase one of cloud and phase one of so many of these other things. And part of that's why we who are technologists love technology and hate it all at the same time. Right about the time you figure out something and wrap your brain around it and start to wonder how you might implement it, someone else has come up with something else that's the new hotness. And you got your brain goes, oh, maybe I should look over that squirrel. And off you go.
Absolutely.
Well, let's focus in on the cloud challenges today. In the intro, I mentioned latency and the challenges there and referred to an earlier show that we recorded where that came up. Mark, before we actually get into defining cloud exchanges, maybe set it up with talking about the latency problem. If I'm going to move to cloud, what does latency do to me? How does that complicate my compute environment?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. I mean, I think it's a great point, and I wish I had seen John Merlin's podcast or listened to his podcast or seen something he'd written about this, because this is something that I've been writing about for many years now. In fact, one of the first articles or blogs I wrote for Switch after joining the company 4.5 years ago was about proximity. It's interesting when you think about the fact that the vast majority of compute designs that I'm seeing today, modern compute infrastructure designs, are pointing more and more towards the idea of high-performance compute. Right? Whether it's a cloud design or whether it's a front end for big data or even just a modern converged infrastructure set, it's looking more and more like high performance compute. Well, you know, what are some of the, not the primary benefits, but some of the assumed benefits of having high performance compute? The assumed benefits are the fact that you can get access to the data and you can get access to the compute and memory with as short a lead time and as short a retrieval time as absolutely possible, making for larger transactions or many, many smaller transactions to occur much quicker. And I see that accelerating. I see more and more of that happening. And I also wrote another blog about density and see that driving density in the data center faster than we have over the last 7 or 8 years, over the next 5 years. And so the point of latency is key on several layers. You've talked about a couple of them already. One is the fact that many of the workloads in the average enterprise are tied to each other. They either share data or they share direct links. When you're using one application, it actually calls the other application. Whatever it is, there are a lot of crossovers in the average enterprise data center. When you just take one of those bits of that environment and move it to Amazon or move it to Google or Microsoft or SoftLayer or somebody else, you have to try to figure out how to accommodate the new latency, the new reality of this distributed work environment.
Yeah, the fact that you moved it from probably microseconds of latency to many milliseconds of latency.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then when you talk about a distributed database application and you've tried to figure out how to take what had been a static database and move it into multiple databases geographically dispersed, that problem becomes even more of an issue. And I think it's a reason we haven't seen more solutions like the Netflix solution, right? I mean, Netflix has done a fantastic job in figuring out how to isolate and distribute data in regions and find ways to protect those regions across the region. But in reality, the platform they have is just a slice, in real sense, of what an enterprise data center looks like from an application and infrastructure design standpoint. So just saying, well, I'm going to do the same thing that Netflix did to my applications in my data center is like saying, I'm going to take this scooter and I'm going to turn it into the space shuttle. It's just not that easy. And when you combine the disruption across applications with the fact that even for your users, the application you've put in the cloud may now be 20 or 30 milliseconds away from where most of your users were in the past, just because your headquarters is in Phoenix and you've put most of it in the Eastern cloud for Amazon or something like that, all of a sudden they're looking at a 30 or 40 or even 50 millisecond round trip for that traffic. And depending on the application and how many transactions and interactions that application has, that could be really burdensome to the average customer. So latency, proximity are huge areas of risk and opportunity in the cloud space.
Do I have a lot of control over where my workloads go geographically? I mean, you mentioned regions. You gave an example of Netflix, who can control their regions. And then you mentioned like Amazon, east, west, et cetera. Where are these data centers actually located? And again, how much control do I have over that?
certainly with most of the cloud providers, you have some control over deciding where it will be. And then it's up to you to determine whether or not being in that one place is safe for your enterprise and whether you should try to distribute it across multiple, even if just for redundancy's sake. But the truth is that even if you're saying, well, I want to be, most of my customers are near the West region, then if you have, backup or other customers that need the East region, again, this becomes problematic. It's not an easy problem to solve. Customers have been attempting to solve it, and users have been attempting to solve it inside their own data centers for years. And now combining it with, other internal cross-platform requirements and distribution into other data centers becomes problematic. And just because a customer thinks they know where they want the workload to be doesn't necessarily guarantee that that will solve some perceived performance problem. You know, it's like saying, like you've pointed out in the intro, bandwidth, as an example, doesn't solve problems all the time, even when bandwidth may actually be part of the problem. It's more than that.
So you're saying geographical placement doesn't necessarily resolve the problem either?
No, not necessarily. Again, because you have to combine it with how the application works, first how it's written, and how it's shared across other applications in your environment, and then how it's made redundant. So if you've distributed your application and the application has to call from one side of the world to the other in order to complete a transaction for you, then you may realize delays that you wouldn't have realized in your own data center. And that may be a function of how the application is designed, how you've installed the application, or how the cloud provider is enabling access or distributing access or enabling capability in support of that application's function.
That's a good point. It kind of reminds me of my time spent consulting in the medical field, where in some cases it's cardiology or radiology or whatever department it is ingesting these really, really large image files that are going to an image repository locally. And the challenge they're facing is, as an architect, I need to get that data protected. I need to be replicated. I need to mirror it, potentially get it out to remote sites where other hospitals or facilities can look and investigate that data for performing surgery or whatnot. But these are such large files that it's kind of the question of how far away are we talking about? How much throughput is available? Can I even compress this image? And that's where the challenge for the architect comes about to say, where can I put this data? Is a co-location even possible for the architecture? Because in a lot of cases, the software stack was not written. I say in almost every case, it's not been written for a cloud type architecture. It's assuming almost a zero sum latency. There's really no appetite at all to push around the data. Are these issues that you feel just time will solve? Are these folks kind of the niche user that just sort of have to eat private or very closely co-located locations for the time being?
I think certainly some things will get solved. We'll find better ways to distribute the right data to the right places. But it really is one of the biggest issues in the enterprise today, right? So historically, what have we tried to do? We've tried to silo infrastructure in order to define the infrastructure to best support a specific application or set of applications on top of that infrastructure, right? Whether it was your email or your ERP or your financial system or whatever it was, you defined infrastructure to support it. So looking at that from a broader perspective and saying, well, what about data? Data, we've tried to do the same thing, not for the same problem, but effectively the same thing. And that's we've tried to isolate data in order to say, well, this data is only for this, and this data is only for that, and that data works better if it's in this kind of database, and this data works better if it's in that kind of database. And now we're going full circle to this point where, do we really want all these independent databases? What do these independent databases mean to me using some form of big data solution? And then what happens when I add another new data set to it? Where does that data set have to be? How much of it do I have to share? Is it okay to just be remotely addressable, or does it have to be combined or co-located with the rest of the data? And those changes, to the point already mentioned, while those changes give us work all the time, they're not easily answered, and they're not going away anytime soon. We're continuing to modify what we use, how we use it, and what we bring into the environment. And we're finding more and more ways to tie more and more of what we do together. So effectively, we're creating these giant big black boxes. And in the end, it's still always going to be all about the data. We can talk about the compute. We can talk about application design. But in the end, it's really going to be, how do we identify, how do we classify, how do we catalog, how do we enable, how do we share, how do we back up the data?
It's interesting that even this many years into talking about the concept of data gravity, meaning how far is my compute from whatever data it needs to crunch, it's still a very real and present danger to data center architecture, right? You can't just put data on the other side of the world and expect the latency to make sense. You know, if it takes 2 seconds to grab a piece of data, crunch it, and return a result, that's just not going to work. And it's important to remember, I think, as modern architects, there's still either some or in some cases, a lot of applications that just don't tolerate latency outside of a kind of private data center. That may be a co-located data center with a full stack is inside of it, or your own four walls.
The point that Mark brought out that really grabbed me is kind of related to that. You know, you were talking about can't tolerate latency outside of the private DC, but then Mark pointed out that geography isn't the only issue to consider when you're dealing with latency because, I mean, depending on your application, there could be latency issues up and down the stack, all related to processes talking to one another, etc. And you've got to consider that as well.
Hi, this is Drew saying thanks to today's sponsor, InterOp. InterOp is the leading independent IT conference, and the Packet Pushers are putting together a 2-day Future of Networking Summit for InterOp Las Vegas 2016. The goal of the summit is to identify current and emerging technologies that are going to affect the networking industry over the next 5 to 10 years. And we're bringing in special guests, experts, practitioners, and of course, the Packet Pushers themselves. We'll talk about the changing state of network operations, advances in network hardware and silicon, open networking, SD-WAN, containers, and more. You can join us for live podcast recordings, and we'll have an after-hours hangout, too. And besides the Future of Networking Summit, InterOp's assembling a full slate of independent, top-notch content on security, virtualization, IT leadership, SDN, and more. So make your plans now to join us at InterOp Las Vegas, May 2nd through the 6th, at the beautiful Mandalay Bay Hotel. Use the code PPUSHERS when you register, and you can get 25% off 5-day, 3-day, and 2-day conference passes. We hope to see you there, and now back to the conversation.
Excellent. I think we've dug pretty deep into the quote-unquote latency problem. Where is data going to live? How do we get there? Where do we put the data? And then how the applications respond to kind of the geographical disbursement of that data. The next thing I wanted to pick apart was the idea behind a cloud exchange. Let's tee it up with a very simple question. What is a cloud exchange, Mark?
Hopefully I'm not writing over the NIST definition of a cloud exchange, assuming there is one, because I haven't looked. But in our opinion, in Rob Roy's opinion, a cloud exchange is an environment that allows customers to effectively, rapidly, securely adopt cloud technology when they need to from a variety of sources, right? So if you look at the environment, for instance, in the Switch SuperNaps, you just pick a layer of, the cloud marketplace, a global cloud marketplace, and we have 15 or 20 providers in that particular space. So infrastructure as a service, we probably have 30 providers in our space that provide some form of infrastructure as a service. And so customers that come into our place, our environment here, can look at those providers and say, well, I'm a gaming customer. You know, I'm a Call of Duty client, and I want a good platform for my game. How do I do that? Who's the best provider in that space? And we say, well, there are these 30 different providers in infrastructure as a service, but these five really have designs that are more meant for the gaming type infrastructure. We introduce them, we help them, we give them guidance as they attempt to adopt a new opportunity. But the benefit is that not only do they have those tools and capabilities right there available to them in the space, but they have a variety of them, right? So instead of saying, yes, we have this gaming cloud and we have this ERP cloud, and we have this compliance cloud, we have 5, 10, 15 in each one of those areas of opportunity. And so that gives the customer the kind of flexibility they want to know that if they want to do some testing, that's great. And if they don't like what they learn, they can take that 10 gig cross connect we put up for them a month ago and move it to the next cage over, which is the next cloud provider, and try it again. And there's almost zero risk. There's no latency while they worry about internet firewalls or buying a connection to someplace or signing new agreements or any of that stuff. It's all within the scale of the marketplace. I mean, another way to look at it is that we've created a super mall for, you know, modern technology services adoption.
It sounds like there's really two aspects to it. I mean, one, you're a broker of these services, and then two, you provide the physical connectivity to those services for your mutual customers. Mutual customers meaning, you know, the end user wanting to consume cloud services, and then those cloud service providers, if you will.
Absolutely. And we're a broker in the and I don't even know how to describe that. I mean, I was going to say in the purest sense, but in the purest sense, a broker probably wants something out of the brokering. And we are not asking for anything from either our provider or our customers when we do that brokering. Our customers are the cloud providers, and they're the eBays and the Disneys and the Qualcomms and everybody else that happen to be in our data center. They're all our customers. Just so happens that we have an ecosystem of suppliers that are amongst our customers.
Okay, so we're not saying a cloud provider pays to be a part of the SuperNAP Cloud Exchange. They just happen to be SuperNAP customers, and so you're facilitating a connection because, hey, guys, we're already all here in the same facilities anyway, so let's, you know, make sense of this.
That's absolutely right. So when we create that ecosystem, when we create that community, we throw all these different partners and providers and even customers together. One of the interesting side effects is, I mean, if you think about the layman's version of big data and what the benefit is that you throw a bunch of data together that may seemingly be unrelated, and you magically come up with new answers. And while big data doesn't work that way per se in every sense, I'm sure it can in some, but that's kind of what's happening here, right? We've got all these different providers from different parts of the ecosystem, the global ecosystem of suppliers, and we're actually creating new services and capabilities that sometimes even belong to our customers or are generated in conjunction with a customer or across two different providers. So the saying that what we really do is just open door number one or open door number three, depending on what a customer needs, sort of oversimplifies what kind of opportunity is presented by having all these people in the same place.
Yeah, and that brings up a good point. If you're not just opening the door and kind of letting it go wild per se, how do you manage latency to your customers or between the providers to get to the providers? And are there special contracts and SLAs that are provided by the Cloud Exchange to facilitate these connections?
Yeah, so what we provide from the Cloud Exchange perspective, of course, we provide all the things that make a data center work, right? We provide all the physical security, we provide all the air conditioning, all the power, the rack space, all the other fundamentals that allow for your environment to be successful, including external connectivity, better than most on the planet. But within the data center, assuming you're using a cloud provider that is in the same space, then yes, we provide, you know, security and SLAs and deliverables, both from a performance standpoint of the delivery and a performance of use for cross connects within the facility, right? And those are a very simple form of basically just pulling fiber, you know, across the data center and putting it into another patch panel. And now giving a customer anywhere from 10 gig to as many gig as they want connectivity into a particular cloud. And so, again, you think about even just that small piece of the marketplace, and you think about what that enables. That enables customers to make, on a 2 or 3 day notice requirement, make a connection to a cloud at capacities of 10 gig plus, right? 10 gig, 100 gig, even more. And their investment is whatever the small monthly cost is for that one piece of fiber. And it's only a month. If they decide they don't need it after the course of a month, they disconnect. It's a, you know, even if they wanted 100 gig, you're talking about a few thousand dollars of investment and 2 days worth of time in order to sample a cloud environment for a whole month.
Let me flip the typical design here on its head for a second. If I'm coloed in SuperNAP as a customer and I want to try out clouds through the Cloud Exchange, great, I can do that. That's easy enough. What if I've still got local facilities? I mean, can I get a pipe into SuperNAP that would allow me to access the Cloud Exchange in that way?
Absolutely. I would say probably after the capabilities built into the data centers from the beginning by, you know, Rob Roy's designs, it's the connectivity story that he created through the purchase of the failed Enron asset here in Las Vegas. So I don't know how, if you know the story, but in 2001 timeframe, Enron went bankrupt. And they had been, in the last days of their existence, building a network exchange here in Las Vegas. Effectively, they were going to do for networking what they were trying to do for power and do arbitrage. And their first customer was going to be Blockbuster. If that had worked, you know, Netflix may never have happened. And unfortunately, they failed. And then consequently, a few years after that, Netflix came into play and Blockbuster failed. But the result of their effort was billions of dollars spent by national telecoms, you know, the AT&Ts and Verizons and AboveNets and all these guys, and Enron itself, to pull a bunch of fiber into a data center in the northern part of Las Vegas. And Rob bought that asset out of bankruptcy, and now we're using that asset and its embedded cost and capability in contracts to enable connectivity for our customers like they really just can't buy anywhere else, not only in capacity and diversity, but at cost, right? And we consider this sort of like the rest of the ecosystem. We consider this as an enabler to our customers' growth, which is in the long run good for us. This is not where we try to make money from our customers, but rather where we enable our customers to grow with us. And whether that's greater connectivity from their home office to a cloud in the building, or whether it's greater connectivity from their office in Seattle to their office in Portland, we don't care. We can help them with all of it.
Just to qualify this, the use case for that, a pipe from my local facility into, well, in the context of what we're talking about here, SuperNAP Las Vegas, by getting that pipe into SuperNAP, am I effectively closer to a bunch of services as opposed to just going over the internet?
Yes. I mean, potentially, if you think about how that could be adopted, is that you get a pipe into the SuperNAP, and then where that pipe ends up being connected within the SuperNAP is totally at your discretion, right? You could connect to one cloud, or you could connect to 10 clouds, or you could move from one cloud across each individual cloud in the environment over a period of time. It all depends on your needs, but the benefit is it's one connection to the facility.
It's fun hearing Enron and Blockbuster just going my way back machine, thinking turn of the millennium. They were the titans of industry in that space. And then now it's kind of the butt of a joke when you mention those two companies.
Exactly. Yeah,
but you also brought up Netflix, and that kind of itched my brain a little bit about traffic prioritization. Is that an option that you can pay for when you connect in? Say one customer wants to be the first one to make it in and out of the exchange as opposed to the others?
Well, it's not so much like there's some amorphous exchange space, right? It's not as if there's like the equivalent of a cool engineer drawing of this cloud where you tap into the exchange and boom, you have access to 100 different clouds. In the background, it's still, you know, we got to, if it's ProfitBricks cloud, or if it's VirtuStream's cloud, or if it's Joyent's cloud, or whoever's cloud it is, VMware's cloud, we still have to run a cable for you from one place to another. And we're working on ways to make that simplified so that we could be much more logical. But even when it's logical, what it really solves for us is just a little bit of time of an engineer having to go into the data center. In the end, it's still the equivalent of a train switching station. And we can, you know, bring your train in and turn it around and make it go back out the opposite direction. Or make it go into four different directions, if that's what you need. But the main benefit is that, let's say a company is not in the data center and they want to take advantage of one of the clouds that happens to be in our data center. So they get a connection to Switch, and that first connection goes to that cloud. But because they've got a physical dedicated line, or it could be IP traffic, but let's say they've got a dedicated connection to the Switch SuperNAP, they could now take that same connection and move it to any other one of the clouds inside the and behind that external IP address that they originally connected to. So, in effect, giving them that switching capability. And that's, you know, it's a powerful tool, but it's even more powerful for those that are already in the space. And what the Enron networking purchase allows is for us to basically help the customer remove the cost of networking as a decision factor in moving forward with a project. Because many of our customers see, even our biggest customers, and you know, you've heard some of the names, you know, Amgen, eBay, McAfee, Intel, PayPal, Disney, Qualcomm, I could go on and on and on. Even customers of that size see anywhere from a 35 to as much as an 85% cost benefit when they get their network brokered through us. And that's network anywhere to anywhere, anywhere on the planet, not just from their building to our building.
Well, Mark, it's interesting that this conversation shifted a little bit to talking about networking and being circuit centric in a way, because I guess that is the big value add here. We're laying roads down to deal with latency was the context of the conversation as we opened it up. I mean, but is that all this is about, latency, or are there other services I'm getting from the cloud exchange, such as IP address blocks or security or reporting or SLA guarantees, the kind of things that, you know, when I think of buying a WAN circuit that I would typically get from a provider?
Yeah, many of the provider benefits that you would get still exist, right? While we may broker the access to a network capability, capacity, or diversity, what you're really buying is you're buying access to a bunch of providers through us that makes for better selection capability and lower risk and potentially faster time to market with much lower cost. Your decision factor as you go through that process is deciding of the 20 vendors that eventually minimally fit your requirements out of the 50 plus that we have, of those 20 vendors, which 5 or 6 of them offer the best overall combination of performance and services, et cetera, that you need to put on top of your network. So many of the services that you mentioned are still services that, you know, a level 3 or a Savvis or whoever would throw on top of the network for the customer. What we provide within the facility for anyone who is cross-connected is basically what we're providing is, you know, big fat pipes over a very short distance. And so things like, availability and time to deliver and just guaranteed capacity are pretty straightforward and easy for us to SLA. And, you know, risks associated with, compromise, backhoes, jitter, extensive latency kind of go out the door.
Looking back at our discussion here, one of the things that stuck out to me is that there is a cloud exchange network that's worth tapping into, whether you're in the middle of wherever this cloud exchange is hosted or not. In other words, I don't have to be a colo customer to take advantage of the cloud exchange. I can get a pipe that goes from my local data center up into the facility where the cloud exchange is being hosted and therefore get some of those latency advantages. I got the direct pipe. I'm no longer going across the internet to access Amazon or a billion other clouds that are out there. I'm going directly into that facility and then getting access to the cloud providers that are hosted in that facility. And that's an advantage worth considering, even if you're not a colo consumer. What did you take away from it, Chris?
Just that cloud exchanges, I'll admit, they're kind of a new concept to me. I've obviously not been doing my homework. It was really great to hear Mark describe it in greater detail and a more practical detail rather than just here's something on a blog post somewhere. But it really sounds like the future of data center architecture or design, and that physically you're planting your flag. You're saying, I'm going to put my gear in this particular facility or these multiple facilities. But then you can consume all the resources that are necessary for your users and their applications based on that cloud exchange. It kind of reminds me of like the App Store. You know, it doesn't matter what phone I necessarily have. I can bring whatever gear I need into the facility. But I can use all the apps in the Android ecosystem as an example just by the fact that I have an Android device. And that sounds really forward-thinking to me.
Well, Mark, I have a pretty good understanding of what a cloud exchange is and how it operates. It makes sense to me. I understand what you guys at SuperNet specifically have done. So we've hinted around it. I kind of think I know the answer, but let's get right into the details here of who the typical cloud exchange customers are. Now, I come from an enterprise background, but do you also have service provider customers? Who all is consuming these services?
Yeah, pretty much across the board. There's no one area, customer, or industry that's more likely to use the cloud exchange. It really boils down to need and opportunity to fulfill a requirement. And the benefit, again, of the cloud exchange is your ability to look at many different potential solution options from service providers and adopt with little or no risk in a very short time frame. So that appeals to a wide cross-section of customers, as you might imagine. And many of our customers that are inside the data center today that have taken advantage of the cloud exchange in a big way are companies like gaming companies and healthcare companies. To give you one example, I hate to say this because I hate to label any one of our customers, but you know, a lot of people in the industry might think that the average healthcare company is still trying to catch up to what some of us might consider to be a modern IT environment. But just one example, a large, very large healthcare customer came to us probably about a year ago now, And, you know, they ask for the basics, just like every customer that comes to a colocation provider would ask for. They ask for the basics, and we solved the basics for them, which are things like physical security and availability and performance and power and cooling and cost, et cetera. Kind of the handful of bucket list items for a colo to provide. But then they came back and said, oh, and by the way, we need someone, you know, preferably, you know, a well-established managed services company to manage some of our legacy gear in our cage. Okay, yeah, we've got four or five you could select from, so we can help you with that. Oh, and then we also have a VMware cloud, and we want to be able to burst to a similar cloud, ideally in your facility. Okay, well, we've got three, maybe four providers in that space so we could help you with. Okay, so that's done. Oh, and then by the way, we need someone else to help manage our private cloud with compliance in our data center, in our cage. Yeah, okay, well, probably some of the first guys, but there are a couple of other companies that might be able to help with that too. Oh, and then we also need to know that we have access to storage as a service and potential big data as a service. So here, I mean, this is a laundry list. Like, I don't even know where you'd go to ask for that. And they've come to what used to be no better than a garage. From an IT enablement standpoint, the average colocation company was no better than a different garage for your car.
I've been in some pretty rough facilities. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and they're asking for this kind of stuff. So if that's not an indicator of the value that the ecosystem provides to these customers in helping them actually create differentiation from what they were doing before inside their own private data center, I don't know what does.
Yeah, I remember the three P's, right, when you're shopping for colos, ping, power, pipe. And that
That's right.
You were looking for that at the cheapest dollar per square foot or per tile or per energy unit if you're just buying power. That was how you shop for a colo. And how long do I have to drive when there's an issue, or am I going to buy gold hands? The times, they are a-changing. Mark, you have a pretty awesome blog post that came out a couple of days ago about data center hugging. Yeah. And there's a number of kind of questions that you bring up about where are your customers, employees, how are you going to grow, that kind of thing. If I'm an architect or a company looking to consume a cloud exchange, how much do I need my latency to drop before going to a cloud exchange kind of makes sense?
Yeah, I think it really will depend on the application and the value, right? I mean, we all, all of us on this call, I would imagine, at some point have thought about technology for technology's sake, right? And so when you think about an application and you think about what that application delivers, if you're on the networking side or the performance side, all you can think of is how do I do this and deliver it at the lowest possible latency for my customer? And then let somebody else worry about whether that's going to be expensive. So all of that has to be factored into your decision about whether or not you want to find even lower latency than you have. But the singular benefit of enabling access to a cloud exchange from your data center, which is in the same environment as the cloud exchange, the singular benefit there is that you're removing so much of the back-end processing that would normally be distributed across a wide range, and you're not adding any cost, right? So yeah. It's not necessarily about deciding whether you should move to a cloud exchange. It's about whether or not being in an environment that can enable a cloud exchange is an environment that, one, makes sense for you to be in to begin with. One, because that data center happens to be in the right place to serve most of your customers already. You know, it has the other capabilities that you need from a growth, from a future-proofing standpoint, et cetera, et cetera. But then, oh, by the way, open door number three, you've got access to all these different providers and there's zero latency. It's just a no-brainer for most of our customers.
So to kind of feed it back, latency is a very tactical, kind of nebulous metric to look at when it comes to overarching data center design. And when we're talking about cloud exchange, there's so many other metrics you can look at and so many other options and services available that just to focus on latency as that one magic number would be almost a disservice to your data center design and your tenants and customers within the enterprise.
No, absolutely. But, you know, throwing that question of latency back at both of us, Chris, what underlies many of the questions that I put in that blog that you referenced is the idea of latency, right? I mean, and so, you know, when you're thinking about a data center selection and you're trying to figure out where you should put it, you have to figure out ahead of time where your customers are likely to be, internal or external or both. Your trying to make that decision on an internal data center is at best getting your finger wet and putting it into the wind and saying, this is what it's going to do tomorrow in the weather. You just really have no idea. And so putting yourself in an environment where you can leverage access to so many different providers and help minimize that risk without gaining any additional cost, because it's just part of the environment. It's not a, there's not some cost benefit analysis you have to go through to be part of the exchange. You just have to decide whether a colo company, obviously I'm supporting Switch SuperNAP, whether that colo company can solve your business requirements. And if it can, then you've just added a bunch of icing on the cake in the sense of being able to get access at very low latency to almost no latency, all these different environments.
And who doesn't like icing? That sounds
exactly
great.
Exactly.
Well, that's a good place for us to wrap up this edition of the DataKnots podcast. Mark, can you share with folks how they can follow you? Blog, Twitter, Facebook, whatever you'd like to share.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a regular Twitter user, participate in some tweet chats online and everything. My Twitter handle is MTHIELE10, so MTLE10. And I also blog fairly regularly. I try to get, somewhere around 2 a month on switchscribe.com.
Thanks very much for joining us today and making the time. And all of you listening, thanks very much for the numbers that are growing. We're doing well on the DataKnots show. Keep telling your friends. Keep tweeting about it. Rate us on iTunes. We would appreciate all those things. And that is it for today's edition of the DataKnots podcast. You can reach me. I'm Ethan at EC Banks on Twitter. And my blog is ethancbanks.com. Chris is at Chris Wall, and you can find his blog at wallnetwork.com. For more superb DataKnots content, head on over to packetpushers.net and partake of the bountiful feast of podcast goodness. And until then, may your server lights blink, your storage spindles spin, and your cables be cleanly managed.
Yeah, I got my shorts on and my flip-flops down in Austin.
I do not. I have a wool top and a dress shirt on top of that.
Tell me what you're wearing, baby.